of brain synthroid erythrocytes that can be obtained through mirror symmetry, and hopefully I'm going to be able to convince you that it's a useful description, at least for certain applications. And this is mainly based on this paper that came out in December, and maybe towards the end I will talk about some work in progress also. So, first of all, the motivation. So why should one study mirror symmetry for brain synthroid orbitals? And so the first reason, just that is that in this case one has some simple workable models in which lots of computations can be done explicitly, and so it is nice to establish this kind of setup, because then more interesting questions about mirror symmetry can be asked in this setup. And the good feature of this kind of examples is that even if in this talk I will mainly concentrate on an example, but there is a large class of examples of this kind. One can treat in a way similar to what I will discuss, all the toroidal orbitals, supersymmetric or not, and in various dimensions. And also, what is perhaps the most interesting part, one can also study the deformations of these models. So with the same kind of technique, one can analyze large class of models. And then, more specifically about gibberellins, it is a good kind of model to analyze to see how different descriptions of gibberellins come together, how they are related to each other. So in this case, we have space-time description of gibberellins, that is a description of toroidal orbitals, but then there'll be also boundary state description, and since there will be a Lamé-Gisbourg orbital in this correspondence, we can also talk about topological brains described by metric factorization. So all these three kind of descriptions have a nice interplay, and it's in this simple example one can see it really explicitly. And another nice thing is to see how topological information and non-topological information about these brains come together. So this so much for the actual work I've been doing. And then good thing is that there seems to be some potential application of this kind of analysis. And so maybe the first one should be this one. So obviously at the beginning, once one has established this correspondence between brains in the two mirror models, then it's possible to ask more complicated and more interesting mirror symmetry questions. And for example, it seems that it would be a good framework to study some instant-on computation problems. But it's also interesting for the relationship between conformal theory and geometry more in general. And for this, the prototypical example would be K3. So there one has a kind of good understanding of the geometry of the moduli space, and it would be nice to see how certain properties of the geometry are reflected in the conformal theory description of these models. And I'll try to say something about this later. And then a bit for unrelated possible applications are application to intersecting brain models, because the models of this kind are constructed some putting certain brains at different angles in toroidal orbitals. So if we have an alternative description of these brains, maybe a more efficient one for computation, that could be interesting for this kind of models. And then even more ambitiously, there's a potential application to clustering pattern condensation in compact backgrounds. But these are just mentioned briefly at the end if there is time. Okay. So this is the motivation. Now, what I'm going to do in this talk will be mainly concentrating on an example, which is the simplest possible non-trivial example, so T2-MOSI-4. Still keeping in mind that whatever I'm going to say can be somehow adapted for more complicated and more general examples. So first, I will summarize some facts known about this mirror symmetry relation for the bulk theory, And then, this allows us to establish this equivalence between T2-MOSI-4 and this Landau-Ginzburg model. And then I'll discuss brains in these models. And we'll see how the brains, certain class of brains in T2-MOSI-4 can be described as boundary state in some minimal models. And this will be the main part of the talk, just to see how through mirror symmetry one can relate to these kind of descriptions of the brain. And then at the end, very briefly, I'll try to expand a bit more on the possible applications that I mentioned earlier. Okay. So. Okay, so first of all, I'm just going to summarize something for the bulk theory, as I said. So let's just consider a two-dimensional toroid and the orbit for the dam. So in this case, there is just a finite list of different orbifolds one can construct because these are classified by the crystallographic group in the plane, and there are, I don't remember if 19 or something like that, different models. And the basic examples are these three here. So for the Z3 and Z6 orbifold, we need an hexagonal lattice, and for the Z4 orbifold, that's a square lattice. And then the one interesting thing is that from these three examples, it's possible to obtain all the other two-dimensional toroidal orbifolds just by engaging some geometric or non-geometric symmetry of this model. So in this sense, already restricting to this example is not as restrictive as it might seem, because one can easily, not easily or not, that depends, but one can at least in principle generalize to more models, and also one can of course construct higher dimensional models just by composing these and taking more orbitals in case. Okay, so one important feature of these three models here in particular is that it is not possible to deform the lattice that is used to construct the torus by preserving the symmetry that is being engaged. So this means that the corresponding background, if I wanted to construct a string theory that contains this piece as background, then it would have no complex structure deformations associated to this part of the background. And this means that in the mirror model, we cannot have any carrier parameter. And so this is already telling us that the mirror model cannot be a geometric model, because to have a geometric model, I need at least to have one carrier parameter associated with the volume. The easiest way to see that how a non-geometric model arises is just, since these are just toroid, roughly one can just think of mirror symmetry as a duality. And if one tries to apply to duality, one gets some asymmetric orbifold. So these are orbifolds in which the group is acting with a different phase on the left movers and right movers on the worksheet. So because of this, I cannot take anymore the left movers and right movers and put them together to make a space-time coordinate. And so this is intrinsically non-geometric. So this is one obvious description of the mirror of these models, but more interesting description can be found to be in terms of some Landau-Ginzburg models. And so the reason why this is more interesting in some sense is because whereas this kind of description is only valid at a certain point in moduli space, here, and one can try to deform it, but here instead with the Landau-Ginzburg description, it's very easy to move in moduli space, because this is what the Landau-Ginzburg model is good for, after all, is to explore different points in moduli space. So here, for the example that I'm going to discuss, the mirror Landau-Ginzburg has a superpotential in two variables, y1 and y2, and it is a quartic polynomial with this deformation alpha that corresponds to the Keller parameter of T2-MOSI-4. So when alpha equals zero is the case when there is no big field and the radius of the two circles is the circular radius, which is the point that you will be concentrating more. But from in this description, just getting alpha, one can move to other points in moduli space. So I'm going to concentrate on this example 2.4 from now on.
Asymmetric orbital doesn't have any model diagram, right? Doesn't have complex vector model diagram in particular. But those examples would have Taylor model diagram.
Well, I haven't studied this example really, but I mean the description in terms of an asymmetric orbifold of this model, I haven't studied it in detail.
Okay.
But I think that it should definitely have a marginal deformation corresponding to this one here, just one. It should be possible to find.
Is it
there
is an overall
moment,
right? So before you do T2L, those
orbifolds
are geometric, so
mm-hmm.
is there at least one
Taylor modulus? Now, the Taylor modulus is on one side, but then this is the mirror, so here I want a complex structure modulus.
Right, so the mirror would have to have at least one complex.
Yeah, no, it would have to have. Now, he was saying that in general, I don't know general
it's
properties.
Of
Well, this one has to have it, but I don't know about this too much, so I can't say. Let's see.
That's
geometric. Sorry, I don't think I can tell you about that. But okay, so let's concentrate only on the T2.4 orbifold. And even if in principle we want to think eventually to have this as some part of a 3D background, for most of the time I will be just discussing it as a conformative theory just by itself. So there will be always a type zero modular invariance, and so we shouldn't even worry about the fact that this orbifold is in fact non-supersymmetric; it's unstable. But so this is not. It just meant well, we just want to analyze for the moment the properties of this this piece of the background, and then one can construct the string theory around it. Okay, so for this conformative theory, there are. So we have a spectrum of primary field that is made of the untwisted sector plus a twisted sector, and the twist fields are associated to the point, to the fixed points of the orbifold. So there are these two points here are fixed by the Z4 elements of the group, and there are four twist fields associated with this, associated with the omega and omega inverse. And then these two fixed points here are associated with the order two elements, but they are related by the order one element. So out of them, one gets only three instead of four twist fields, because we need to take a linear combination of the twist fields of order two. So this is all the spectrum in the twist sector. And so some one thing that I didn't mention is that, of course, we have models with n equals to Schwarzschild supersymmetry, so we can write down a superconformal algebra. Here I'm writing, just with the usual notation, I guess, the current. But if we restricted the torus to be at the search word radius, then we have an additional U1 current. Which so here you can recognize the currents that would appear for each of the two circles at the circular radius to make the SU2 enhanced symmetry. But then the Z4 orbifold lives on this combination, so we only have an enhanced U1, and we can put all these things together to construct an extended superconformal algebra at that point. Now, what I want to try to convince you of, just in this slide, is that if we restrict the U to be at the dual radius, then by mirror symmetry, this model is related to a tensor product of two minimal models of the AN series. And to see this, one can compare the first of all the currents in the conformal algebra. So we can write for one model, we can write them in this form using the Fermionic representation of the fields, and if we have two models, we just construct the currents by adding up those of the two A2 model, and it is possible to change to make a field identification such that this current take exactly the form of those that I wrote in the previous page. And the fact that here I have two U1 currents tells me that I can construct two you want, okay, not here. The fact that I have two models tells me that I can construct two U1 currents. So one of them will be the U1 current in the conform in the n equals to superconformal algebra of the torus, and the other current is mapped to the enhanced U1 current at the circular radius. Okay, and the only interesting thing maybe about this map is that if one uses the usual convention to write down the superconformal algebras of the minimal models on one side and the orbifold on the other side, then it's necessary to introduce a minus sign in the map for the right movers only. And so the map is not the same for left and right movers. And this minus sign here is the sign that this equivalence that one can verify so explicitly is in fact a mirror symmetry. So this will bring some, it brings with it all the properties that we already know about behavioral mirror models, but from the point of view of the CFT, it's just a minus sign. Okay, so comparing just the currents, of course, is not the proof that the two models are equivalent, but one can compare also the spectrum and the partition function. So I'm just going to show to you the map between the primary fields of the two models, because this will be in part needed later. I mean, not exactly the map of each field, but just the fact that there is such an explicit map. So here I'm writing on this column here the quantum numbers of the two minimal models, and that label the primary field. And for each of them, I can write down the primary field on the 2-4. Now, I'm not sure if you can read this, but in any case, so here I have the untwisted sector, and it's all written in terms of operators that are some Z4 orbits of operators that create units of winding and momentum. Here, these are the some of the combination of twist fields, and this, here I have the excited twist fields, tau, that are also primary fields. Important thing is we can identify here the chiral and antichiral primary fields in the model, and except for this one here, that is the only marginal one, all the others, the non-marginal primary fields, are all constructed in terms of twist fields on the torus side. So this is going to be important. And this marginal operator here instead is just the scalar or compressor deformation that you have depending on which side you look at it. Okay, so this so even if I guess you have to trust me on this because I didn't really show all the details, but I hope I have convinced that this relation here is valid. Now this is just for a point in modular space, so we have the circular radius on the torus side, and on this side, if we want to move in the modular space, we just turn on the chiral deformation, and in particular, we can go at a different radius, or we can turn on the B field. On this side, even if we can identify in the CFT the operator that actually generates this deformation, is not so easy. Actually, I don't think it is understood how to do this, to deform the FTD's CFT. But one can use this description in terms of a Landau-Gilbert model, and then from here, just turn on this compressor deformation, as I was saying at the beginning. And there is an explicit map between alpha on this side and the radius and the B field on the other side. This one is not going to be relevant here. In any case, in this way, we can extend the equivalence to the full modular space of the theory. And so for the Landau-Gilbert model, the observables are the elements of the chiral ring, so various polynomials in y1 and y2 with the constraint that y1 cubed and y2 cubed are set to zero. And so since we know how to associate to these operators and the primary field in the minimal models, then using the map that I was showing earlier, we can also know how to map the observables of the Landau-Gilbert model into some observables on the 2-4. And
From the Landau-Gilbert model, how do I see that there is only one parameter that I get from the potential y1?
No, there are lots of other polynomials that I can add, but those are not marginal deformations. So here I can add all operators in this ring can be added to the Lagrangian superpotential, but except this one that has the same degree as these other two terms, the other ones are some relevant deformations. Because again, this is not supersymmetric theory, so it has happened.
So these guys are the people you showed in the previous slide.
The chiral ring elements are those that were appearing in the list in the mid here. So all these primary fields here correspond to some observables in the Lambda-Gisbourne model. And so since I know how to map the Lambda-Gisbourne model observables to these primary fields, through the map I know also how to map them into observables 22 Morsi 4. Okay, so this ends the summary of the bulk story. Now we want to look at deep rings in these models. So we'll not consider the most general kind of deep rings, but just eight rings in the orbifold. And these by mirror symmetry are identified with the deep rings and the mirror theory. So in particular, in this conformal field theory, if we stay at one point in modular space, or otherwise just general difference in the Lambda-Gisbourne model. So let's see, let's start from T2 Morsi 4. Here we have, from the Voigtian point of view, a description of brains in terms of bounded states. But one a good feature of this site is that we also have a geometric interpretation, space-time description of these deep brains. And for A brains in this kind of model, we expect D1 brains, Z4 orbits of D1 brains because it's an orbifold, but and then we maybe with the Wilson line, but this is all the things. On this side, in the CFT, we have again a description in terms of bounded states, following the work of Recknagel and Schumerus, and also some later work by Recknagel about a special kind of boundary state, the permutation boundary states that will be relevant later. So these are done for Gapnell models, but they can be adapted to this case just by in some sense undoing the orbifold that would be there in the Gapnell model. And unfortunately here we don't have a geometric interpretation of any kind. And then finally there is this description in the Lambda-Gisbourne model. Now here we can only describe topological brains, whereas before, even if I was saying A and B brains, I really meant just that just refers to the which supercharges are preserved by the boundary. But other than that, one can construct a full physical boundary state. Instead, here we can only study topological information about these brains, but. It is still a convenient description because even if we only get some information, the computations are so much easier than in the CFT itself. They only involve some algebraic manipulations. And also the other good feature is that this approach is valid for any point in modular space. In principle, one can get the same information about any point. Whereas here, even if we know everything very explicitly, we know it only for one point. Anyway, so the goal is to make the map between these deep brains precise and then see if we can learn something about the deep brains in these models from in the process. So I will start from the Lambda-Gisbourne description, which is maybe more, less familiar to everybody. So this is going to be just a very quick review. I'm just going to list some facts that will be useful. So the B brains in the Lambda-Gisbourne model are conjectured to be classified by factorizations of the superpotential. And this was a conjecture by Concevich and published, and then the physics explanation of this construction was given by Kapustin, Lee, and Brunner and collaborators at the beginning, and then more work was done on it by other groups. In any case, so the idea is very simple. So we have this super potential that in our case was a quartic polynomial, and we need to find the f and g such that they factorize W. And another thing is that we don't just restrict to polynomial, but we can take f and g to be matrices of arbitrary rank. And all such objects will describe a V-brain, a topological V-brain in a Randall-Ginzburg model associated with W. Now, this is a very abstract characterization of V-brains. So usually people don't think about V-brains in these terms. But so one thing to say is that one can rephrase this in more physical language by interpreting these f and g as some boundary potentials in a boundary reaction. So it is possible to relate this to some more usual discussions of V-brains. But the fact that it is so abstract is in fact a good feature of it, because one can reduce computations to something very simple, just taking what is essential from the problem. And so it turns out that all computations are in terms of matrices and polynomials. So they're very simple. So of course we can't compute any kind of observers because we are in the topological theory. But we can compute, well, first of all, I guess the spectrum of so the boundary chiral ring, so the spectrum of boundary chiral primers. And then we can compute the intersection matrix between two V-brains, which is the boundary with an index. And correlators, bulk or boundary correlators of any observables that is in the either the bulk or the boundary chiral ring. And so here I'm giving just an example. It's not the most general formula, but this is the formula for this one-point function. And it's the only formula we're going to need here. So here on this side, I'm denoting by this the one-point function of an operator O with the D-brain characterized by D on the boundary. So the information about the D-brain is encoded in the matrix D like this, where F and G are those two factors that I was mentioning earlier. And then the one-point function depends on only on knowledge of O, and here we have the individual superpotential, and the information about the D-brains goes here. We're taking a residue, so it's really just an algebraic algebraic computation that one can do. It's not really complicated, especially if the factorization is low rank, or even better, just a polynomial, and it can be done.
So, what does it mean that the relevance of matrices when you use a factorization? Is there some simple physical interpretation of the Zeran?
Right. So, that depends. But so if, to see more physically how what is the meaning of this factor, I was saying one can write down the boundary action, and then one can. See that these f and g are some boundary potentials. Now, in the case in which it's a polynomial factorization, it goes simply like this. Otherwise, one introduces some extra boundary degrees of freedom, some boundary fermions, and for every pair of boundary fermions, so you increase the rank of the matrix. So that's one interpretation of it. But now, since this is a non-geometric model, to really have an interpretation of these D-brains, we need to, well, okay, depending what kind of interpretation, but for example, if what we're going to see is that we can map these brains to the brains in the torus, and then you can see what is the meaning of all their features, because then you can describe them in a more intuitive form. Here, the point is that, as I was going to say so it looks like there are infinite possibilities for this factorization, so I can increase the rank more and more. But all of this will not be independent, and it can very possibly happen that a very high rank factorization turns out to be equivalent to a low rank one. So in that sense, it's hard to say what is the meaning of the rank just a priori. In fact, so there are lots of equivalences in this set of factorizations, just from an isomorphism of just Well, okay, the most important actually kind of equivalence is in terms of bound states, so I just mentioned this. So there is a notion in this formalism of how a B brain being a bound state of two other brains. So if one wants to restrict to a minimal set of brains, one should not consider all those that are obtained as bound states of other brains, or that are related to other brains in other ways. But just keep the smallest and simplest set of brains from which it's possible to construct all the other ones as bound states or as anti-brains or objects of this kind. So this is not very simple to do, but for certain cases it is possible to isolate such a set of such a minimal set of brains. And then we only need to look at those, and all the others will inherit their properties if everyone is studying them. So as a theorem, it is only known for a superpotential of only one variable, what is the minimal set of brains. But if one is not looking for a theorem, but just for some arguments that would be convincing enough, then in other models it's also possible. So, for example, in the model I'm discussing now, even if it's not at all clear that these are the only brains that one should consider, there is a good amount of evidence that these are the factorizations that can generate all the other ones as bound state or another way of saying. And so in this case, these are just polynomial factorizations. So here, eta is 4 root of minus 1. And so we have 4 different factorizations of this kind. In this case, we are lucky we don't even have to deal with matrices. It's just polynomials. And so there was kind of some evidence that these are the most fundamental factorizations in this case. And kind of evidence comes from the fact that all the other factorizations that have been explicitly constructed in this case can be related to these ones as bound states. And also, more importantly, in the conformality description of the Sein-Lambert-Hilbert model, there is some knowledge of boundary states there. And all the boundary states that are known in that CFT can be somehow reconducted to these kind of factorizations. So it can still be that there are more boundary states in the CFT that have not been found yet and that would not be related to this. But for the moment, everything that is known can be described in terms of this factorization. So I'm going to assume that this is the minimal set of brains we need to look at in this case. And so now the question is, what are these fundamental brains in T2-Mod-Z4? So for this, we only have the tools of topological theory, so we can only compute the kind of observables I mentioned before. But this already gives some hints. So for example, from just working out the spectrum of boundary operators, one sees that there are no operators that correspond to the formation of the brain in the orbifold. So the basically this means that the brain, for some reason, is constrained to sit at one point before it cannot move. And then we can compute some of these quantum functions. So here I summarize the result of the only non-zero ones in this table. So each line is a different factorization, so a different d-brain. These are labeled by eta as well. And I'm taking some linear combination of Lambert-Hilbert observables that map to twist fields in the anti-2-Mod-Z4 side, inverting the map that I was giving in the table before. So the map is so these are only the order 2 twist fields appear, and which corresponds to the fact that only the quadratic Lambert-Hilbert operator have non-zero one-point function. And now the information that we can get from this is very interesting information because of the fact that in the orbifold, these twist fields have to sit at specific points, and we know at which point they are. So if a brain is charged under one of these Lambert-Hilbert operators, then we know that the corresponding brain in the orbifold has to go through a certain point. So out of this one-point function, we get some geometrical information. So for example, let's take this this brain here. So this one is charged under Q0, and so at zero is sitting here at the origin. then it has no charge under S sigma 1, so it does not pass through the middle of the torus, but it has charge under these two Twiss fields here. So we can expect this brain to roughly go through along these two axes, which makes sense because even if we don't see it here, then we should have also the other two images. We need some four images to implement the Z4 orbital. So just from this topological information, we know, well, first of all, we know that we expect D1 brains just because they are A brains. Then we know that we should look for brains that are charged under some twisted sector operators. And we know that they are constrained to the fixed points, which are two consistent things because, of course, if they have charge under the twisted fields, they cannot move. Okay, so this is.
What does it mean a brain charged under the twisted sector?
It means that if I write the boundary state, there will be some Ishibashi state in it that corresponds to some primary field that is a twisted sector primary field. So, and it means that if I compute the one-point function of that operator on the disk with this brain on the boundary, I get a non-zero value. Now, here I'm computing it in the topological theory, but I could then do it on the other side and compare this. So this is the conjecture so far, just based on topological information. From that table, one can try to conjecture this identification. So the four brains that are mapped to those four basic factorizations on the other side are a brain that goes along this axis, plus the other two images, with one of these two possible values of the Wilson lines that are so the constraint on only these two values come from the orbital protection. And then other two brains that geometrically look like this, and again with the discrete choice of Wilson lines. So we get four brains of this kind. Now, for the moment, again, this is just a conjecture because it's just based on topological information. One can try to confirm it, to find some evidence, looking now at these geometric configurations and trying to write down at least the topological term in points of the boundary states on T2 mod Z4 that would correspond to such configurations. So, for example, if we have a brain with a Wilson line on it, we know how the Wilson line should enter in front of the twist field that sits at the various points. And so we can write down something like this, and from these expressions we can reproduce all the quantities computed in the random Gibbs model. So this is already some non-trivial check. But, okay, of course, the next thing we want to do is to go to the non-topological comparison of these breaks. So, for this, we need the fact that at this point in modular space, there is this exact CFT description in which we know how to write the boundary states. So what I said so far could have been done at any point in modular space, even if, just for convenience, I kept it at this point with alpha equals zero. But now it is really necessary to be at this point. So let's see. Now we are going to use the knowledge of B brains in the conformal field theory. And I'm just going to review a few facts about this. So for a single two model, we have primary fields labeled by these three quantum numbers. And for this specific example, they take these values. In particular, S is the quantum number that tells us if we are in the Ramon or in the NS sector. And since the primary fields are labeled by this, then we have Ishibashi states with these same quantum numbers. Now, for a single minimal model, it is known exactly what is the full list of B-type brains. And so those are doesn't satisfy this kind of boundary conditions. And so they all have this form. So they are written in terms of Ishibashi states for which one of the quantum numbers is always set to zero. So it's not the most general possible brain. And they depend only on two quantum numbers. They are characterized only by two quantum numbers, capital L and capital S, which are in the same ranges as the small L and small s. Now, what we really want is brains in the tensor product of two minimal models. So the simplest thing to do is to take just two of these guys here and make a brain in the full theory. But a more subtle construction it was found by Lechnagel, and it consists in looking for a solution to boundary conditions of this kind, in which the left moving current on one side couples to the right moving current of another model. So we have two models, and we are gluing the left moving part of the stress energy tensor of one model to the right moving part of the other model. And since permutation of fields between these two models is a symmetry, we can do this. So this gives rise to this kind of boundary state. I will say what the coefficients are later, but so they depend, they are constructed on this permutation Ishibashi states that have, for example, this relation between the quantum numbers to satisfy the boundary conditions, and it depends on capital L, capital M, and then S1 and S2 will be always set to zero to for consistency with the boundary condition and supercharges that are imposed in the Landau-Gisbourg model, even if I didn't go through that. But so they are always going to be zero. Okay, so now the situation is like this. So we have this kind of picture in which we have this mirror symmetry that raises two sides, and on these two sides we have discussed already brains in here, conjecturing the equivalent on the other side. And now here we have a much more solid discussion of brains, but we don't know yet how this comparison goes. On the other hand, so how to map brains between this CFT and the Landau-Gisbourg model, this is known. And I'm not going to go through that, but it turns out that the boundary states that correspond to this minimal set of brains that I was considering are permutation boundary states with this possible four quantum numbers. And this was worked out by various groups, and especially by Brunner and Gabriel last year. So to summarize the situation, we have this conjecture map. So this kind of geometric configurations map to these Landau-Gisbourg brains. And we know that these Landau-Gisbourg brains are correspond to these boundary states. Now this kind of arrow is a bit deceptive because of course we have so much more information on this side because this is a physical boundary state. So the idea is that this is the physical boundary state that computes the same quantities as this topological brain. But here we have more information. So having the explicit form of this, now we can attempt a map between physical brains in the two models. And I'm going to show just one example of this. So, okay, so let's see. In principle, what one could do would be take the explicit form of this boundary state in the minimal models and then look for somewhere in the literature for the explicit form of the boundary states and the two multi form and just compare them and see if they are the same. But to my knowledge, there isn't in the literature an explicit form for these boundary states and the two multi form. And in fact, it turns out that for toroidal orbifolds, there isn't really a systematic construction of boundary states the way there is in the minimal models. So, of course, a lot is known about brains in or Z2 orbifolds or toroid, and then even much more complicated orbifolds in specific case when people have worked it out where needed, but there isn't really systematic construction of them. And this one in particular was not known. So instead of doing that, we can go another way. So we take the full expression for the permutation boundary states in the minimal model. We set the quantum numbers to the value that I said earlier, that are those that correspond to the Landau-Gisbourg brains. And then we can use the map that I was showing at the beginning between the primary fields in the minimal models and the primary fields on the torus. And just take a little bit of time and write down what is, using the dictionary, what this boundary state becomes in the T2 multi form language. And this is the result for these two values of capital N. So Now we have to look at this boundary state and decide if this looks like it could be a boundary state that describes this this thing. Now here it's not really clear because I used somewhat condensed notation to make it fit here, but these numbers denote the units of winding and momentum in the two directions of the torus. So this is all the untwisted sector up to, well, up to here, the first two lines. And first of all, we see that it has the right boundary conditions, in the sense it has one Dirichlet and one Neumann, and it's a Z4 orbit of this. Then we can see that there are some signs that appear here depending on capital M. And if we relate capital M to the Wilson line in this way, then they enter in the right way, in the sense that the minus sign appears where there is some odd unit of winding in the Ishibashi state. And then from these other pieces here, we can see the topological charges which I computed before and all that. So we can conclude that this is a good description of this kind of brain. So okay, this was just for two of them, and the other one goes in a similar way. Now let me just summarize what we learned from this example, and then I'll mention more general things just very briefly. Okay, so first of all, we have established a neurosymmetry correspondence for a certain class of the brains in T2 orbitals and the mirror model, which is an unreadable model, but especially we work with CFT points. Now, this was done for a specific example, and I went into all the details for that, but it is not hard to extend this correspondence to more general examples, especially to the examples that are more nearly connected to this one that I discussed. It's really straightforward to extend it. And also, one doesn't need, of course, all the time then to go through the procedure of taking the boundary state, rewriting it in the other language, and really checking that it does the job. Once we have checked it once, we can just believe that the correspondence exists and just work with the Landau-Ginzburg formula, which is just much easier to work with. A nice thing that comes from this is that we have found some relation between geometric interpretation of the brains in a toroidal compactification and boundary state in Kepler models or mass factorizations, which is sometimes good both ways. Maybe not for this model, but for more interesting models, because on this side we have very powerful techniques, but there isn't much intuition about the brains. So it's nice if you can see them in this language. For example, the fact that two of them are, that one brain is bound state of two other brains, it becomes so much more intuitive, whereas from the point of view of boundary states or matrix factorizations, it's much more obscure. You have to do a lot of computation to understand that. And it's good the other way, because here, although we have a lot of intuition, as I was saying, there are many examples in which boundary states are not known explicitly and computations are hard, whereas if we can establish a correspondence of this kind, we can use all the techniques that are well established on this side to compute what we want. And then, of course, I was working only at this specific point in Madure space, but the most interesting thing about this correspondence is then to be able to move in Madure space. And for this, we can repeat the analysis I did before for the Landau-Ginzburg side of the correspondence. But then more guesswork is needed there, because we don't have this exact safety description. And of course, one ambitious thing would be to try to use now the information of that is in this map for the deform model to try to understand something about the CFT that corresponds to the deform Landau-Ginzburg model, which is an open problem. And it's an interesting one, maybe independent of the same theory. Okay, so now let me briefly mention some generalizations and some possible other ideas related with this. Okay. So I guess they go in order from more mathematical to more physically interesting. So just bear with me for this slide, and then come to something else. So this is what I was saying. So I can try to deform the Landau-Ginzburg model, which means that I'm looking at the T2-Z4 orbital for a general value of B field or the radius. And If one does this, in this case, it's simple to see that this minimal set of brains that I have considered so far can be continuously deformed as I deformed the model. And so one can, for example, do the same thing as before, compute the one-point functions and see what they give. Now the one-point functions are going to depend on this parameter alpha. And this is a bit less straightforward to do than what I did before, because one needs to, so the formula involves a double residue, which is not so simple as the other one. But one can modify slightly the formula to make it simpler and still manage to compute this. And so the only surprising thing that happens is that now even the coupling on the field city here in the middle is non-zero. So what this, well, this can be interpreted in various ways, but one interpretation, of course, is that since we are dealing with the map between A and B model, so this is the B model side, the B model answer is already containing all the instanton corrections of the A model computation. So we can interpret the value of this non-zero one-point function as the result of an instanton sum. And so this means that there is some open surface with boundary on the brain that couples the brain to this point in the middle. And so this by itself is an interesting thing, because this kind of instanton computation is hard to do directly in the orbifold. In fact, not many computations of this kind have been done. And it's good to have some predictions, so to speak, for the result, because this is a very simple model in which one could try to do this kind of computation. So this is maybe more just a kind of technical point, but still it could be interesting. And of course, from the deformation, there are other things to study. What I wanted to point out is because it seems kind of neat to me. So this is my final slide. I just want to mention a few other things. So this is one example of a model, maybe more interesting model that is closely related to the one that I considered. So one can construct a point in the modular space of K3 just by taking product of two copies of T2 mod Z4 and then modding out by some quantum Z4, and we obtain this supersymmetric orbifold of T4. Now this is mapped to this Landau-Gilbert model plus deformations, of course, if I want to deform from the orbifold point. And it is really straightforward to extend the analysis I discussed so far to this case. This doesn't need much effort. And one finds that in this case, what happened is that the brains are similar, except that now they have D2 brains. And we still get the same kind of pattern. They go to the fixed points and they can have a Wilson line. But now what happens is that instead of needing to sum over four images, as it was for T2 mod Z4, we see it is enough to sum over two images, because if you take into account the orientation of the brain, you can see maybe that it's enough to do two steps to go back to the original configuration. So in this case, one finds some extended fractional brains, in the sense that they have half the tension as the regular brains in the orbifold. And so one question could be if one can learn something about the world volume theory in these brains, and if this can be something different from what happens for points like fractional brains. This is a possible question. Anyway, one can carry out the full map even in this case. And now, more related to the possibility of deformation, in this case, it's a better setup to study deformations, because the deformations of KT concretely are well known, and this map can also be extended, so one can try to gain some information about the relationship between certain geometric properties and the CFT or Landau-Gilbert description on the other side. Better would be about the CFT, of course. And so for example, one can try to follow the brains along certain paths and see what happens, to see when they are obstructed and why, and all these kind of questions. And this, in fact, was in part done by Brunner, Gabriel, and Keller last week. And that I think just as a first step in this analysis, there's much more to be understood. And also with Ilka Brunner, I'm also trying to think about this problem more. But in any case, there are lots of questions that can be asked here. Okay, so now very briefly, we can study even more interesting models with the same method. So models that can be actually useful for some compactifications, like what we call the OptiSix. And among these models, there are models that have been already considered for these constructions with intersecting brains. And some of these configurations can be actually, well, one can see the possibility of rewriting them, of analyzing them using some boundary states in some Gapner model. Now, in some cases, it might be easy, in some cases, not easy, but in principle, there is this possibility. And if for some interesting case it were not hard to do, then it would be a good tool to analyze these models because, again, boundary state and this side are not usually known exactly. Okay, and then the last possible application is, as I was saying before, maybe the most ambitious, but also the it's my favorite. And it's about tachyon condensation in compact spaces. And here I'm talking about closed ring tachyon condensation. So there has been lots of work done for kind of questions with the localized tachyons in some orbitals of C2, for example, from the first APS paper, and then lots of work in that direction. So there one considers a fractional brain stuck at a singular point, where the tachyonic mode is also living, so the brain couples to this tachyonic mode. And studying the word volume theory in the brain, one can get some information about the decay of the space. And one can use also other tools to understand this. So again, one can use mirror symmetry, one can use some more formal tools, but that's the basic idea. And so now, not so much is known about, actually very little is known about equivalent statements in compact models. One reason is that the compact, for a compact orbifold, because the central charge has to diminish under the flow, so in one doesn't have the way out that is there for a non-compact space, and so really one expresses that the degrees of freedom will decrease. So then, it seems that maybe there is not so much meaning in asking what happens to the space because the space is only supposed to somehow disappear under this tachyon condensation. Still, it would be interesting to see how it actually happens. And so in this case, we have some description of brains that are in some sense analogous to these fractional brains that are used to probe these C2 mod Z and orbitals. But these are extended brains, so they couple to the tachyonic mode, but they also know that they are in a compact space. So one question could be just to try to study the world volume theory in these brains and see if one can learn something about this the decay of these spaces. This is not so straightforward because one needs to find a good model in the sense that there are lots of the models, the simple models that come to mind, they have also bulk tachyons, and so it would be a bit cheating just to look at the decay of the localized one. So in that sense, maybe it's not such a straightforward proposal as it might seem. But still, one could find some modeling which that can be done. And I'm not going to go too much into this because I think I'm already out of time, but apart from these simple setups, one can come up with more clever ones in which is not just a T2 orbifold, but maybe taking some other orbifold of it and have some examples in mind in which maybe one can study this problem a bit more precisely. But this is all conjecture. So anyway, it seems to me that it's a nice possible application of all these analyses. And now I'm going to stop here.